Welcome, welcome. We are back for another episode of The Lock-In. What I expect will be a turbo episode as we whiz around the latest big stories. I'm David Lappin alongside my fellow WPT Global Ambassador, Dara O'Kearney. Dara, you're at roughly the halfway point of your Vegas campaign. You've been doing a daily diary, I've seen. Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, it's been in many ways my weirdest Vegas campaign ever because Vegas campaigns either tend to go very well or very badly, but this is pretty much slap in the middle. I keep sort of like getting into the money. The min cash here is significant. It's always 2x your buy-in. So if you cash every second tournament, you're going to break even. Now I didn't cash my biggest buy-in, so that kind of makes a difference. But I'm down, I think, only 4 or 5K at this point, which is technically I've had way worse Vegases than that. The worst story I ever remember being at the halfway point was back in 2015. I was down 25K and feeling very depressed and thinking maybe I'll go home. Then I got my biggest ever score, 300K, and that turned into my best ever Vegas. So, hopefully the same happens yet. The bigger buying stuff for me pretty much starts now. The main event starts next week, and there's some other 3Ks and 5Ks that'll kind of determine how my overall campaign was.
Very good, very good. Yes, I think I can speak for a lot of people when I say we've been enjoying your diary entries. Joining us this week is a well, let's call him the George to our John and Paul, or maybe the donkey to our Shrek and Fiona, the one and only Bartholomew Richard Carter. Barry, how are you doing?
I guess I should be happy I'm not Ringo then in that analogy. I do like that. Hey,
Arguably, George is the best one.
did George get an award? I got my award finally arrived the other day. So I'm just
Hey.
noticing mine other one in your background, David. So I just thought I'd bring it out.
No, that's not actually your one. Your one is in a nice presentation box. I'm going to let you fight over it. I'm going to certainly arrive with it when you're both present, so I can't be accused of rigging it in any way. Thank you very much for joining us today, Barry. Before we tackle these topics, tell us about your recent trip to Manchester. You were performing ambassadorial duties there in the 235 casino, I know. And you told me ahead of broadcast, actually, how you're starting to enjoy the public role, how you're starting to get the knack of this ambassadorial business. Was it a case of getting used to the adoration from all the meme lovers everywhere?
You're right. The first trip we did as a Party Poker official ambassador was in London, and I must admit I actually was quite intimidated by the whole experience. I didn't like the sudden attention, and I felt a little bit out of place. That wasn't the case in Manchester. I had a fantastic time, found my feet a little bit with it. The big thing I was I guess surprised about, and I guess you guys could speak to this, is how many like general sort of what I'd class as support questions I was getting, like when is Party Poker going to get this? Why doesn't Party Poker does this? What stop is next on the tour? What time is the side event? Just things like that. So I kind of definitely need to brush up for the next event because I wasn't expecting as much of it. But then I spent a lot of time with Jamie Staples over the week. And he was the consummate ambassador. He was answering everybody's questions, and he wasn't getting much free time. So he will be my role model going forward for that kind of things. And of course, you guys.
Very, very good. Yeah, no, sound lad, Jamie.
To a lesser
What I would
extent.
say is, yes, of course, like it's absolutely part and parcel, and Darrow would testify to this as well, that you just end up being first line customer support at least once a day, I feel, on average, probably closer to twice a day. And what I already notice is, even though Unibet is in the rearview mirror and we're a few weeks out of that contract and a few weeks into our WPT life now, I'm still fielding the occasional question about Unibet things. And I'm sort of thinking to myself, I have to have a cut off at some point where I just won't reply to these people. I'm doing my best to sort of transition away. Try, explain to the people in as nice a way as I can. It's not really my thing anymore, but I'm pretty sure this is the answer. But yeah, at a certain point, I think that's going to have to go. Dara, any sort of any of these transitional things happening to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I still get lots of messages about Unibet, usually asking to get tickets extended.
Yeah.
And at least I still know the people in Unibet, so I can pass those on. And they've always been very good about that. But yeah, you're right. Like, there's a certain point you just kind of have to go, look, I'm not Unibet anymore. You're going to have to go ask somebody else. On the whole main thing, I was actually playing a nightly last night, and I was sitting beside a very nice, chatty guy from Toronto, Jay Choi, who plays mixed games. And we were chatting away, and you know, we were very friendly. He had no idea who I was, obviously. And then at the break, he was like, "Oh, I'm Jay. What's your name?" And I said, "Dara." And then he was like, "Oh, wow, you're Dara O'Carroll. I get emails from you all the time." But then we started talking about Barry because Jay make does memes, and I was like, "Oh yeah, Barry does memes as well." And he referred to Barry as the meme god. So you know, Barry's
Oh,
heavy.
I know who he is. He's funny. I do know who he is. He's really
Good.
good. Yeah. He
Yeah.
also does a podcast or something, right? He does
Something
some.
like that. Yeah. And
Yeah.
he's I think he's involved in. Maybe Patrick Tardif's Twitch stream as well. He seemed great friends with Patrick. Anyway, he was sending selfies of me and him to Patrick. So yeah, and that's kind of been the other side of my experience here. People have been insanely friendly. It's the friendliest series ever, which I think a lot has to do with the app. The app has removed all of the problems around late reg or even just reg. You know, there's no lines are a thing of the past now, and everybody's just kind of getting to the table in a good mood.
Very good, very good. Well, look, moving swiftly to the biggest story of the year in poker, actually. Back in April, we kind of broke the news of the Club WPT Gold Rush promotion, or at least we kind of teased it when our good pal Jamie Kerstetter was on the show. Essentially, Club WPT Gold gave away hundreds of these Gold Rush tickets for winning tournaments, competing in challenges, lots of fun stuff as well. Then they chose 11 WSOP events. And if you entered one of those as a ticket holder, you could win a bonus million if you outright won that event. Poker pro Michael Lavin won a 2800 runner free roll on the site a few months back. And that gave him sort of eligibility to enter these 11 events with the 1 million up top bonus. 3 weeks ago, he played the $1,500 no limit hold'em shootout event. And ultimately, Sun ran the final table to win the bracelet, the 267K first prize, and the bonus 1 million. Pretty sick stuff there, obviously. Cut to last week, last Wednesday to be exact, and it was the turn of poker pro Jesse Yaganuma, who won his Gold Rush ticket by speed eating nachos, to take on the final table of the 11,996 runner, $1,500 millionaire maker. He got heads up versus James Carroll, and he managed to overturn a 10-1 chip deficit to win the first prize of 1.25 million plus the bonus milli. Now, since the victory, there has been speculation that Carroll dumped his chips to Yaganuma, implying that a deal may have been struck to lock up the promotional $1 million. America's Cardroom ambassador Rob Kuhn was especially vexed at the idea that something was awry during heads up play, and he kept posting hands that he believed were suspicious. Now, Scott Sieber also took to Twitter that night with a very important tweet. I thought he said, "Tonight is an extremely telling night in the poker world for those who side with a multi-billion dollar private equity firm over the individual just trying to play some cards. Anyone choosing wrongly can easily be ignored from here until eternity about all things." WSOP were actually the ones to launch an investigation into the matter the day after the tournament. They tweeted, "Last night we were made aware of potential breach of the official WSOP tournament rules during heads up play in event 53. An investigation is underway at this time. First and second place have not been confirmed, and neither the prize money nor the bracelets have been officially awarded." Club WPT Gold ambassador Doug Pugh released a video around the same time as that press release in which he indicated that WPT Gold had no intention of withholding the $1 million prize from Yaganuma, but it is nonetheless a sweaty time for him and Carroll with almost 2.3 million quid on the line. Barry, you had some fun memeing about this one. What is your actual take?
Yeah, my actual take is it was chip dumping, but it's not cheating. The really strong view I have on this is the WSOP do not allow heads up deal making. Sorry, final table deal making whatsoever, and this has caused a plethora of problems over the years with people having to because deals still happen. So people privately deal, and then some people don't honor those deals. And my understanding is there was nothing in the WPT promotional rules that say you have to win the tournament outright. And if a deal was allowed, this would have been avoided. And what effectively happened was a deal. Nobody got cheated. This wasn't collusion because there was no victim. If there was a victim, it was the WPT, but this is exactly what the WPT wanted to happen. So this was a victimless crime. It looks a little bit crappy if you're watching it and you're seeing these hands play out, but I would strongly argue that this isn't sports. We are not being paid to play in these events. These players put their own money up. It was their prize pool that they were divvying up. And yeah, looks bad, but absolutely nothing wrong with it. And if the World Series try and withhold the money, I don't think they possibly could, but if they try and withhold the money, I think it may be the biggest PR disaster in poker history.
Well said, well said. Well, Dar, turning to you, collusion is defined by the WSOP rules as an agreement between or among two or more participants to engage in illegal or unethical acts against other participants. Suffice to say, at least my understanding of this is, for heads of play, there are no other participants. So one would assume the investigation will look into earlier play to ascertain whether something collusive took place. Although it is worth noting that in that statement, they did seem to fixate on heads up. You're obviously in Vegas, and it's no doubt the talk of the town there at the moment. What's your general sentiment, and what is your view?
Yeah, I mean, the general sentiment is people are going that this is kind of a straw in a teacup. Particularly recreational players just don't see the issue with this. They all pretty much say, like, we would do exactly the same in the same situation. If this extra million is on offer, then obviously we want to, try and get our share of that. And that is kind of just the general sentiment. There is disquiet in some quarters. And I mean, the reason for the disquiet is it's not obviously the heads up, the guys can do anything and there's no third party, but the issue is potentially if, like, all but there is speculation that all but one of the players on the final table agreed to this deal, that if they got heads up, they would, make sure that the right person won to get the million and take their share. But if it's true that one person didn't agree, then, everybody else has a very strong incentive to take that person out. And even if that wasn't the case, if you think about it, like, say it's you, me, and Barry, and Barry's the guy who can win the million, and we're three-handed. I don't want to knock Barry out because I want to get heads up with Barry and get that extra money. And I do want to knock you out because then I get heads up with Barry and I get the extra money, and vice versa. So it kind of definitely affects the play beforehand as well. I guess that's the issue, but I don't really see what you can do about it, to be honest. I mean, any last longer kind of introduces this element into the thing where it messes with the equities of the tournament. Now, going back to Barry's point about the WSOP not allowing deals, I mean, back in 2015 when I got heads up against Pesh, we met before we went back for the final day, and we agreed a deal. Now, I only did that deal because I trusted Pesh and his backer at the time. Otherwise, I would have been completely exposed because, I did end up coming second. I did end up relying on the guys to honor the deal and send me the extra 38K that had been agreed in the deal. But I trusted Cal and Pesh to do that. But immediately after that deal, I tweeted out that a deal had been done, and Cal told me to take it down because he said the WSOP might disqualify you both for if you make it public that there's a deal. So it does create this very, very messy situation. My own view is kind of just very much in line with the general view as well. I mean, of course, the two guys who gets heads up are going to try and make sure that they get the extra equity. In poker, it's a negative sum game tournaments. We all pay our entry fees and money is taken out that for a rake, which is fine because, obviously the organizers have to be paid and all the dealers have to be paid, et cetera, but it's not like other sports where money is added in by sponsors. This is one of the rare occasions where money has been added in, equity has been added into the prize pool. And it's understandable that players would want to take advantage of that.
Yeah, great points. Now, two data points I want to point out, and I suppose this is just in case it gets kind of into legal territory for the lads who are only accused of this. It absolutely may not have happened. Now, what I would say is, firstly, you want to assure that the right person wins. Carol can just walk out of the building, leave, and blind a stack off. If he does that, there's absolutely no way anyone can force you to be at the table. He can just say that there was something really good on the TV that night, or he had a just somewhere else to be, and his stack would blind off, and it would be very, obvious what was taking place, but it would also somehow not be against the rules, I'm fairly certain. And then secondly, what I would say is that there actually was a clash three-handed where Carol got it in with the best hand against Yagazuma, and had that held in that spot, then this wouldn't have happened. So there is at least one very solid all-in
Yeah.
hand three-handed, which they can argue showed that they were competing against one another. Now, I was aware ahead of this show, and I appreciate, Dara, you did bring up some nice counterpoints there, but I was aware ahead of the show how aligned we'd all sort of be, and keen to get a contrary view. and some decent counter points. I zoomed in on one person's in particular, the opinions held by poker pro Andreas Froehlich, who said there is a common misconception among poker players that heads up deals can never hurt anyone in poker, whereas this is true for regular heads up deals with no outside incentives. The Aganuma versus Carroll situation differs. If you can anticipate a heads up situation where your EV skyrockets with a specific player whilst it doesn't with another player, ICM implications are massive, collusion is incentivized, and game integrity goes out the window. It was essentially the sort of idea you were putting forward there as well, Dara. Let me illustrate this as Andreas with an example. Imagine a player sitting there with 10 big blinds and another with 10 big blinds, and there's a big chip leader with 100 big blinds. One of the eligible players for the, or the only eligible player for the bonus has 10 big blinds. Any intelligent player, if his moral compass would allow him, would start giving walks to Yaganuma while playing hardball against the other guy to ensure Yaganuma reached the heads up phase. A chip dumping deal would happen, and an EV would essentially be maximized in that scenario. This is magnified if first place were only 200K and the outside incentive were still a million. Obviously, that was the case actually in Michael Lavin's game, where there was no sense of collusion. But, in this one, obviously, it was just kind of matching nearly the first prize. But regardless, his point is just to make it that, the incentives could be even larger again. This just goes to show that outside incentives are very often unfair and threaten the integrity of the game. Now, Derek, actually, to stick with you for a second, is it true that promotions, or say, it is true, I shouldn't even poise it, it is true categorically that promotions of this nature benefit some, but not all, can throw a bit of a spanner in the works. The Paddy Power Irish Open Sole Survivor promo, not the exact same thing, but it did skew the ICM for some. I remember that one back in the day, and we'd all love to see that one back, frankly. So, again, people basically just want to see added money to prize pools. People having big last longers, or people having cross books, people going for leaderboards. It could also be a factor if you have a big swap with someone else at the final table, or if one of your horses is at the final table with you. I am, however, in sort of a game of higher reg fees these days and players just basically being squeezed, inclined to be pro promotions. Even if it causes the odd weird spot like this, I'm also inclined to think that this is substantially a problem that WSOP have brought on themselves by having that antiquated attitude towards deal making. Barry's original point. I said in my article on this subject this week, it is the poker players who put up the buy-ins, so it is them who should get to decide what to do with the money. To anyone who would make the argument about devaluing the bracelet, may I point to flip-out bracelets, a $50 online bracelet, and the sheer number of those eyesores that are distributed annually, mainly via less than solid online sites, let's be frank. I also have to give a shout out here to a couple of guys on Twitter who I thought, maybe, nailed this one. User Agles82 said, wasn't the very first bracelet negotiated as to who would win it? I love that one. And Jeremy Timmons pointed out that Doyle and Puggy Pearson famously dumped chips to Amarillo Slim in the 1972 main event just because they didn't want the publicity. So it's not exactly like the WSOP is built on the purity of the ultimate bracelet winner. I mean, they still hang Slim's fucking photo and on the walls, and he's a convicted paedophile. So I'm not exactly sure how, we're meant to feel about, the sanctity of any of this shit, to be honest. Anyway, at the time of recording, the WSOP have issued no further statement on the matter. We obviously hope that the lads get sorted. Moving on to a topic I wish we weren't covering, but every time I open a Poker Org or Poker News or Twitter at the moment, one person's getting a hell of a lot more coverage than anyone else, more than I think Negreanu and Helmuth combined, although I'm blocked by both of those lads, so maybe that has something to do with it. Martin Cabral. I would prefer if it wasn't the case, but Czech player Martin Cabral is getting a lot of attention, not for alleged cheating or alleged pretending to cheat, as has been in the past, but for his inane catchphrases, his stalling, and the debate as to whether he is good or bad for poker. Last week, friend of the show, Maria Konnikova, spoke out. I think she was on the Poker News podcast. And to my surprise, she really divided the room when she said that Martin was a net negative. Poker obviously benefits from having characters, even villains, but putting allegations of impropriety to one side for a moment, Martin does cross over into the territory which we are familiar with from a William Kasouf on this side of the pond, who badgers and berates opponents, never shuts up to let them think, and stalls an egregious amount in the process. Barry, your thoughts on Martin?
Bad for the game, but it's funny to watch it happen to the super high rollers. Is
Yeah.
I think that's the crux of why he's going viral this year, as it were. He seems to be really, really getting under the skin of very established, very stoic, usually incredibly talented players. And as somebody who's never going to be playing in those games, it's kind of funny. And we don't, as a viewer, we don't have to endure the stalling part of things, which I think everybody can agree is just the worst for everything except for satellites by our book. So I think, yeah, it's really bad for the game, but I can understand why he's going viral. The big problem is now you're going to get people in 200 quid tournaments trying to replicate his antics, and that's
No,
going to
you're
be
already getting that.
yeah.
You're not going to. You're already getting that. The night tournament last night, every third table had somebody shouting, "Not like that." So it's, yeah. My stance on this is, I'm not sure it's the fact he gets under the skins of the high rollers, because he gets under everybody's skin. You can see that. You just have to walk over his table, and you can see that everyone is tilted. And in general, when recreations are talking about him, a lot of them are positive and saying, "Oh, well, he's better than all the robots who sit there and do nothing." And these are all guys who haven't played with him. And the few recreational I've met who have played with him go, no, it's horrendous. It's just the same stuff over and over again. Because I think you're looking at it from two different perspectives. If you're just looking at the clips, they're edited 1 to 2 minute clips. They're edited for maximum entertainment. So people think, oh, this is great. But for people who don't understand the effect of it, I would say lock yourself in a small room and play the same clip 200 times and see how you feel about it then. Because that is kind of the real experience of being with Martin. It's just the same thing over and over and over again. Now, I was playing a smaller tournament in the Horseshoe a few days ago. I think it might have been the Millie Maker, which Martin was also in. He was at the other side of a very big room and you could still hear him. So he kind of dominates the space as well. And anybody within earshot was getting visibly annoyed. You know, some of the Americans at my table were, oh, that's Martin over there. They were initially quite, they thought this was good. But after 30 minutes of it, they were, you could see that he was tilting an entire orbit or a considerable radius of tables. So I think that's kind of what it's down to. It's in the editing. We've all been on TV. We know the editors can do whatever they want. They've made Martin look entertaining. In a world where a lot, where the people sitting there stoically is just not entertaining, but I think when you see the experience up close, it's very different. I mean, I've played with Martin before. He doesn't tend to get under my skin, but that's just because I'm fairly hard to tilt at the table, I think. But he definitely does annoy people in the same way that Will does.
I've only played with Martin twice ever in fairly low buy-in stuff. Obviously, he kind of plays everything. He plays low stuff and high stuff. I found him unbelievably annoying. Obviously, I've played with Kasuf a fair amount and find him intolerable. I almost feel like the only way to deal with these fuckers is to like make them play a heads up for hours and hours and like ha torture one another and see who kind of comes out the other side of it. Barry, what do you think?
I'm not sure. Sorry, just before I'm very quick on that point. I'm not sure that's a great idea because I played at the same table as Kasuf and Nicky P, and they were both at it and they both loved each other. So it might turn into a love in.
The one time I played against Will Kasuf, I had food poisoning, and I was never so happy to go out of the tournament to a bad beat. It was terrible. But now, Dara, I have a question for you, actually. When you see a player like Cabrel or Kasuf or anyone who's really trying to put the emphasis on, I'm the trash talker, I'm the guy who shakes things up and I stall and stuff like that, I've always felt that it's someone who's a nit trying to mask the fact that they're a nit. Is that a reasonable read? Like, would
No,
you
absolutely
know?
not. No, neither
No, is it
Kasuf
not?
nor Cabrel are nits. They're actually quite the opposite. They're very, very loose. I mean, the other thing about Cabrel is like the stalling is obviously annoying, but he does other annoying things at the table too. Like he touches other people's chips. He, touches the chips in the middle. He does all. He bends all sorts of rules, which kind of put people on edge as well. There was obviously the whole controversy about the marked cards as well, whether he was marking them or not. So there's always just kind of tension around when he's at the table, because of those factors. And similar thing for Will as well, I would say. So that's part of the issue. Yeah, no, they're both fairly loose players, and they're not afraid to get their chips in. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's basically my point.
Well, look, Speaking of Martin, I suppose kind of a segue, he was at the final table of the 10K Turbo a few days ago, which I'm delighted to say was not won by him, but was in fact won by former guest of the show, Rainer Kempe. Other recent winners for of bracelets include Slovenian pro Blaž Sergjev, who won his second bracelet of the series in the 1500 stud high low event. That was just a couple of days ago. He's, I think, second to Blenny Glasser for the player of the year. And actually, himself and Bollmann will give Benny a run. It's amazing to see that, you can win three bracelets and not have it locked up by any means. Obviously, the guy with two bracelets is bound to be in the hunt. But Bollmann, who I think has a win and a second, but has actually just cashed a lot more than the other guys, has actually accumulated quite a lot of points. Benny, I think, has only cashed four times, but three of them are wins. Anyway, the big one, the fucking huge one, of course, the big story of the week in WSOP stuff, maybe the biggest story ever in WSOP stuff, is the fourth victory in the Poker Players Championship by Michael the Grinder Mizrachi. Now, I watched almost every televised minute of this tournament. It's one of my favorite TV poker things of the year to rail, and my gosh, he raffle stomped the final table, which included very briefly Ben Lam, Albert Dar, who Dar, you might remember we commented and commentated on in Merit, João Vieira, who was Gus Hansen's pick as one to watch. He mentioned him on the last episode of the Chip Race. Andrew Yeh, Esther Ite Taylor, who was great value and has actually overtaken former guest Melissa Burr as the woman who has gone deepest in this prestigious event. She came third, leaving Bryn Kenny to face Grinder for a very short heads up. Grinder had a 15-1 lead and dispatched Kenny in jig time in the final hand. He induced Kenny into breaking the winner in triple draw when Kenny paired up. It was all over. Now, I know mixed games aren't a big part of your repertoires, but Barry, can you contextualize this achievement for me?
Yeah, I mean, before we came to to record, I actually went into a variance calculator because I was like, look, it's a 100 runner event, 120 runner event. Is it that unusual for someone to win four tournaments in, let's say, 20 years? And yeah, it still is, even if you give him a reasonable edge. And I think, like anything with the Players' Championship, the real testament is the people he's playing against and the structures that he's playing in. It's an incredibly slow structured tournament. It goes for like 5 days. And you are playing, I mean, with the, say, 100 people that are playing in it, you are playing with probably 60 of the best players in the world. So, yeah, it's a very big deal. I remember Michael Mizrachi was one of the first players I remember watching on TV when I first got into poker. I used to watch the World Poker Tour broadcast, and he had a nice little run in those tournaments at the very start. So I'm quite excited to see him because I've always been a bit of a fan of his. But yeah, it's really momentous, I think, because of the people that he's playing against.
Yeah, I think it's just unbelievable, really. Like, Jared Blesnick was great value on commentary, and I have to say I really enjoyed some of his commentary. Some of it was a bit derisory and maybe a little unnecessary, although I think that was just kind of part of his shtick. He was just sort of ragging on the quality of the play being not kind of as elite as you would expect from that event. I'm not obviously in any way capable of judging how these guys have played, but I do agree with him on a few hands, like say a Bryn Kenny stud hand, which might be just a sort of blind spot of Bryn's that he misplayed, or just generally picking up on maybe how there was more value in that tournament than there ever has been before. I guess as that field gets over 100 runners, which it definitely did this year, maybe there is a little bit of value in it in a 50K, I guess. Dara, your thoughts on, I suppose, like, let's angle it this way, because Barry's given a really nice, thorough answer there. Sort of contextualize the idea of winning this particular tournament four times, Chip Race, Chip Reese Trophy. Guys, very close to Chip Race, Chip Reese Trophy. And I suppose how surely he has to just get put into the Hall of Fame now as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is seen as the most prestigious tournament, obviously, because it's all the games and it's all the elite players. It's a small runner field, but as Barry said, like, to win it four times is still a real outlier. I mean, my only experience of Michael has been playing in relatively low stake hold'em tournaments, and he has not played well on those occasions. But clearly, when it comes to the big occasion and when it comes to playing all the games, he has a massive edge. On the subject of the coverage, I've heard actually mixed reviews. Now, I have to say I watched none of it, so I can't really comment on that. But some of the mixed game players I know, the really good ones, Danny Sprung in particular, he was quite annoyed by Jared's commentary because he just thought it was too derisory. But then other people who were not Mexican players kind of enjoyed that. And I think, you know, people, it's, I think it's actually fine to be derisory about, you know, big name players, because, you know, we're supposed to be professionals. And if we do something which is clearly bad, it's fair enough to call it out. What you don't want to be doing is, you know, you've got some recreation on the biggest stage of their life and all their friends and family are watching, and then you're being derisory. You know that, David, as an expert commentator, even if you want to convey that they're taking an unusual line, you find a nice way to say it rather than, but yeah, like the people who are into mixed games actually seem to prefer the other commentators, like Chris Fitch and I can't remember who the third person was. But then the other people were like, oh, it was great. He was really ripping these guys apart. So yeah, no, it's a massive achievement for Mizraki, and I agree, you know, it seems worthy enough of going into the Hall of Fame. I actually remember it might be the last time he won it, because I think it was a series where he went into under a bit of a cloud. It was fairly widely known that he was broke, and he had like an incredible series, including winning the Players' Championships. And that sort of brought him back. He does seem to just periodically come back, and you have to respect longevity in poker, because for me, that's the real measure of greatness.
Yeah, for a guy with the moniker Grinder, he doesn't actually grind that much anymore. Hasn't for quite a long time. But what is very obvious is that you look at his resume and it just stacks up incredibly. Seven bracelets, four of which were in this particularly prestigious event, two WPT titles, and you know has been around test of time and whatnot. Just seems like a no-brainer. Actually, quite a and maybe this is something that people do realize, but I've always kind of thought that he carries himself with a kind of a swagger that you would think that he was very cocky, but actually, whenever you hear him speak, he's very humble and it's actually very nice to see. He's obviously got that kind of bulldog style. He kind of ramps up variance a bit in even in these limit games. He sort of plays big pots if he can. And I think just, you know, is very experienced once he had the big stack, for example, which he did going into the final table. I really did fancy him, I'll be honest, because he is the kind of person who would just, his natural game would put everyone in an ICM coffin, as he would just understand that, you know, you've only got like X number of big bets and you really don't want to lose them because of this one guy shorter than you. And he could just ramp up that pressure in early streets, make people fold away quite a lot of equity, fold away better hands a lot of the time in those mixed games on early streets because they just don't want to get to the river with you going, you know, bet, 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 which is kind of what he does. It's just kind of relentless aggression. But yeah, look, just really entertaining to watch him. Great to see another piece of poker history. And yeah, on the commentating thing, I have to say, huge hats off to Ali Najad here, who, by the way, is going to be our guest on the very next episode of the Chip Race. Love to have Ali on just ahead of the WSOP main event coverage. But he was really in his own actually with the mixed game stuff. Obviously, Ali does play all the games, and his sort of technical commentary I thought was actually of an even better level than it is when he's doing Hold'em here. Obviously, you had Blesnik offering the color, but you know, I actually thought Ali did a superb job. Now, would I prefer the Shulman in there? Sure, maybe, but Shulman was busy almost winning another lowball title himself last night. So yeah, incredible stuff. Anyway, before
Just
we
on the
go, oh, go
just
on,
on
sorry,
sorry
Barry,
sorry David,
please
just a
go.
commentary, just to bring everything back around to the first story. If people have the time, they should watch the heads up match from the Millionaire Maker, because the commentators, Joe Stapleton was one of them, clearly knew what was happening almost instantaneously, and their commentary was very diplomatic. But it was a bit like watching The Sixth Sense when you know what the spoiler is. You see all these Easter eggs being given to you all the way. It's quite an entertaining watch.
Very good, very good. I actually will have to watch that back, to be honest. It was too late for me that night. I did make an exception and stayed up late for the BBC, but yeah, might have to go back and look at that. But finally, before we go, I want to highlight a tournament which is actually in running right now as we record. This might well be over by the time I get this show out. I'll do my best to turn it over quickly. The ladies' event has reached the final table. I believe Lon McCarron and Jen Shahady will be in the booth again. They did a fantastic job last year commentating on Shino Akamoto's victory last year, beating Jamie Kerstetter heads up. The question is, will they be commentating on a Shino Akamoto victory this year? Because there are seven left. She has a quarter of the chips in play. It will be a historic back to back, made all the more incredible by the fact that she came second in 2023. Dara, I saw from your diary that you took lots and lots of photos of friends in the ladies' event. You were on the rail supporting everyone you knew. One featured Sheena in the backdrop. She was kind of in the distance of one. A couple of Irish ladies ran deep in this one. Unfortunately, none made the final table, so we can't rail it from that point of view. But will you be railing this one nonetheless?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a phenomenal team. I went over because my friend Alex was at that table, and as soon as I saw Sheena and she had piles of chips in front of her, I was like, "Oh my God, this is potentially setting up one of the most amazing achievements of all time." Because you know, this is a 1,000-runner field or whatever it is, and to go three final tables in a row is incredible. But to go second, first, and wherever she finishes is even more. And she's led. She hit the front with about 80 left, I'm going to say, and she's just kind of pulled away constantly. She's an absolute crusher. I know from talking to some of the Japanese, like the top Asian players, the top Japanese, they really, really rate Sheena. And sometimes when you hear the top male players talk about the female players, it's a little bit qualified. They kind of go, "Oh yeah, well she's good for a girl or whatever." But yeah, no, Sheena really seems to be the real deal. Obviously, there's positive variance there, but it's absolutely phenomenal what she's done in the ladies. And you know, I'm. No disrespect to the other ladies, but I hope she does win because I think it would sort of push the message that if you know there are genuine female crushers out there.
Yeah, I think we'd have a ready-made star if that was the case, Barry.
I was about to echo what Dara said. I think it would be, maybe already is, but if she maybe gets a let's say a podium finish, I think it will be the no limit tournament. Run of all time. I know it's a closed event, but it's still a 1,000-runner event every single year. Dara, this may interest you to know. She's actually a big fan of our ICM book. A few months ago, she sent me a DM asking me a question about bubble factors. So if something goes horribly wrong, then it might have been my answer to that question on Twitter. But no, definitely good luck.
Yeah, I can't believe she asked you rather than me, Barry. This is the way our partnership is going now. People are asking you the questions. Yeah, no, that's great to hear. I know from, as I said, I've spoken to some of the Asian players. They say she takes the game incredibly seriously and studies really hard. So, you know, that's always the kind of player that I will root for. Just one final thing before we wrap up. A point I think which hasn't been made by too many people talking about the heads up story. I actually remember very one of the very first series that I went to. They ran a satellite the night before the 1 million one drop, and Sean Deeb got heads up against some other big name player. I can't remember. It was somebody like Gus Hansen,
Gus
maybe.
Hansen.
It was Gus Hansen. Okay,
It was
and I
Gus
think
Hansen, yeah.
yes. Yeah, so there was entry to the 1 million tournament the next day. And second prize was $900,000. And Deeb at the time did not want to play the 1 million. He wanted the 900,000. So I think he like moved all in except for one chip and then folded to Hansen's raise. At the time, nobody seemed to give a shit. Everybody was like, "Well, of course, yeah. If he wants the money, that's fine." I mean, I appreciate it's a slightly different situation because that probably only entered both players' thinking when they actually got heads up, rather than and also the amount was relatively minor. You know, the difference was minor. On that occasion, just for the lols, the WSOP insisted on paying Deeb out in lammers. So suddenly he had 900,000 in lammers. He had to move, so he was moving up and down the main event line, trying to get people to buy 10,000 lammers off him. But yeah, I do remember. It seems a different reaction, but I guess the story is slightly different. But it does kind of make the point that you know it's the player's money, it's the player's equity, and what they do with it is really up to players.
Well said, well said. Well, Barry, before we go, I want to ask you one final question about Simplify Poker. Actually, you're not really new anymore training site with Dara. Have you guys got anything specific coming up that might, tantalize someone into signing up who hasn't already?
Yeah, well, the big thing at the moment is we have Simplify Poker Academy, which is a monthly subscription site where we're trying to give a bespoke replication of Dara's coaching process at scale with a large group of people. And one of the things that we do is we at least free videos every single month, all like hour-long videos on different topics and webinars. And the thing that I think is most exciting right now is we're dipping our toe into the world of multi-way pots. We've got Dara's longtime student, professional poker player, Turlock McHugh, helping us with that. And it's something that none of us know the answers to yet. We're actually learning and discovering along with the students, and the students are getting a ringside seat into our kind of discovery process, and helping us as well. They're giving us all their multi-way hands and their questions along the way. And there's so little is known about multi-way, and I think even just the fact that we're doing it, even though we're not experts on it, actually puts us in a very, very, very small group of educators out there.
Brilliant, brilliant. That actually sounds fantastic. Well, on that note, I want to thank our guest this week, Barry Carter.
Thank you very much.
And Dara, thank you very much, and the best of luck in your WSOP tourneys this week.
Thank you, David. Yeah, I'm wearing literally the last shirt I have that's clean. My other shirts are in the laundry. That's basically what my life is now. Getting up early, doing a lock-in with you guys, and then going off and get my laundry.
Nice, nice. Well, look, I'm going to leave you with a beautifully produced promo by the lovely people over at WPT Global. By the way, I'm wearing my gear finally. I have a lovely hoodie here, and my patches arrived, Dara. So I am a real ambassador now. I'm not just a pretend one.
Real boy.
Exactly. Look, I'm going to leave you with this beautifully produced promo by the lovely people at WPT Global about the upcoming WPT Cyprus in August. The main event of this one and the main event of summer in Dublin have a similar bonus money promo. We'll all have to wait with bated breath to see if there's any controversy at those final tables. Good night, everyone.
Cyprus, a home to beautiful beaches, gorgeous weather, delicious food, a rich history, and magnificent wines. Cyprus is also home to top-class poker events like the WPT Championship. You can qualify for this $3,500 buy-in event for free. Just sign up to WPT Global, deposit $10, and get a free ticket to our weekly free rolls on Sunday, where you can compete for a ticket. This promotion is running from August 13th to August 18th, and we are giving away a total of 8 tickets. Come join us on WPT Global. We look forward to seeing you in Cyprus.